Can you start by telling us about yourself and your experiences with prisoner support?
So I got involved in doing prisoner support because I'd been doing work in the animal liberation movement for quite a while, and I was good friends with Kevin and Tyler, who were indicted under the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act a few years ago. And so I kind of got thrown into doing prisoner support through just being good friends with them and feeling like I had to do what I could to help my friends out as they were, you know, going through that experience. And that kind of opened me up to a bigger world of prisoner support. And since then, I've been working with them as well as doing support for Nicole and Joseph, who are also indicted under the AETA. And I do work with supporting the Cleveland Four.
Can you speak to the importance of prisoner support as part of the Anarchist Project and other liberatory struggles, and specifically the necessity of supporting long-term prisoners?
I feel like prisoner support is really important just because we have to recognize that, you know, if we're involved in these resistance movements that, you know, are effectively challenging state power, if we are doing that in effective ways, there's going to be pushback. And so we have to acknowledge that that's going to mean that our movements are going to have prisoners. And so if we're going to have prisoners, then we need to just have prisoner support be part of the foundation of the work that we're doing. It needs to be constantly considered as part of our organizing. And we shouldn't consider like state repression as a surprising thing that happens. It should just be something that we, you know, take as something that is going to be there. And so we need to incorporate that in our organizing work that we do. And with prisoner support just being a constant part of that. And then making sure that we do what we can to have the infrastructure to engage in supporting people long term, because if people are going to be in prison for years, then we don't want people to be forgotten about after a few years. That shows, you know, a failure on our part to not be with them, supporting them for every day that they're in there, and making sure that people never feel forgotten. Because if people do feel forgotten or support for them starts lacking because they've been in there longer, then that's showing, you know, the state is then winning, because it just shows that if they give people long enough sentences, then they lose the movement support. So we just need to constantly then be incorporating that in the work we do and making sure that, you know, regardless of the length of someone's sentence, that they can know and trust that people will be there for them until they get out and beyond that.
Can you tell us more about the prisoners that you support?
So I mentioned the Cleveland Fours. I've been doing a lot of support for them. And they are a group of four people, Brandon Baxter, Connor Stevens, Doug Wright, and Josh Stafford. They were Occupy activists who the FBI entrapped into a plot to blow up a bridge. And this plot was created by the FBI. The FBI supplied fake explosives and had a paid FBI informant manipulating this group of young people for many months, and, you know, coerced them into this plot and then prosecuted them as terrorists. They received terrorist enhancements on their convictions when they were sentenced, and they're all serving about 10 years in prison, give or take a year or two, and then lifetime probation after that because of the terrorism enhancement. So definitely ongoing support is needed for them, and their case is definitely representative of what's happened in kind of the post-9/11 era, where we see the government creating these so-called like terrorism plots and then manipulating people into them so that then the government can act like they're capturing terrorists, even though the government's making up the plots. And then keep funding this, you know, so-called war on terror. And we should definitely, like, be breaking down, like, their case, as well as the government has done this in many instances to young Muslim men, and just be very critical of what's happening and pushing back on that, because the government's using it to keep creating this narrative that, you know, they need to engage in all these, like, surveillance and COINTELP tactics in order to fight terrorism, even though the government is the one crafting these plots as well as, you know, the ones carrying out the terroristic acts. And then I said I do support for Nicole and Joseph, who were indicted under the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act because they were accused of freeing animals from fur farms throughout the country, as well as causing other forms of economic damage to stores selling fur. And Joseph is doing 2 years in prison. Nicole got 21 months. Then that's followed by Joseph has 2 years of probation. She has 3 years. Again, looking at the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act, we can see that as well as an example of how the government uses terrorism rhetoric to try to stir up fear around social justice movement and make people afraid to get involved and to take action because afraid that then they'll be prosecuted as terrorists. But something, again, like needing to look at the bigger picture and break down, you know, the government's goal with the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act is, you know, essentially to make people afraid to advocate for animals. Very few people have actually been indicted under it. But it still has had a pretty terrible chilling effect on the movement. And so by supporting people like Nicole and Joseph, as well as, you know, showing that people will continue to engage in work towards the liberation of animals, that's, you know, effective way to push back on the government's intentions with that.
So Brandon Baxter of the Cleveland Four was recently transferred to Illinois. Mm-hmm. What are the circumstances around that move, and do you know how Brandon is adjusting to his new location?
Yeah, so he was recently transferred to FCI Pekin, which is kind of in the middle of nowhere in Illinois. It's near Peoria. It might be slightly well better known. But he was recently transferred there from Terre Haute in Indiana, and so far the move has been good for him. It's a much newer facility than Terre Haute was, so better just conditions in the prison, bigger. He has to be outside more. You know, so he hasn't been there very long yet, so he's also still in the, like, adjustment phase and, you know, establishing new routines, getting settled in there. And, for anyone, like, the transfer process can be stressful just because of the actual process of being transferred and then adjusting to a new environment. But overall, he's feeling better about being there and just, you know, right now working through settling in.
So I just saw that Josh Stafford, or Skelly, was recently released from the SHU. Can you tell us a little bit about that situation?
I don't know details of what happened, but I know that he was transferred. He was in Florida, and now he was transferred to USP McCreary in Kentucky. And I don't have any updates yet on how he's doing with that. He just got there this week. So hopefully people are writing to him and everything to, again, I was just saying about Brandon, the transfer process can be very stressful as people are adjusting to being in a new environment. So just if people can, you know, make sure to be writing letters and stuff like that right now to make sure that he feels support as he is dealing with the same process Brandon is with having to adjust to being in a new place and getting settled in.
So you were talking earlier about Joseph and Nicole. Mm-hmm. I think Joseph is about halfway through his prison sentence now, and Nicole has been in for maybe 6 months. Can you tell us how they're doing and what kind of support they need right now?
Yeah, so Nicole, the last update I have about her is that she's been doing really well. She's been able to make friends with, like, her bunk mates, and she's reading a lot and has an exercise routine and has figured out a schedule for herself and is just handling, you know, the circumstances really well considering. Joseph, unfortunately, his time has been a lot rougher. He's been in the SHU for several months and will likely be in that for a bit longer. And so that's, you know, experiencing a lot of feelings of isolation. The prison has been interfering with his mail a lot, so oftentimes letters that people are sending to him don't get to him, or he realizes that letters he's sending out don't make it to people, so that's been an additional stressor for him to feel more disconnected from the community. But I'd really encourage people to do what they can to keep writing. If you're writing him and you don't hear back, that's likely not his fault. But he still really appreciates hearing from people. And something I've found is that sometimes just a card or a postcard will get to him even when letters don't. So if you can just take a minute to write out a postcard or something to send to him, he really appreciates those shows of support, and it means a lot to him when he's feeling very isolated. He's also really appreciating right now getting like zines and magazines, wanting and articles to read. He hasn't felt as much lately like reading books, but he's really been appreciating the smaller forms of reading material. So both need continued support, and those are some more, unfortunately, some more obstacles in showing support for Joseph, but he really appreciates all the mail that does make it through to him.
So the other ATA case, Kevin and Tyler, I think they're both off house arrest and out of the house, the halfway house now. What are some things that you learned from their cases, and how does support continue even after our friends are released?
So, yeah, Tyler is done with all of his sentence now. He's even off probation. His sentence ended up being 3 months of time served that he served when he was initially arrested, and then 6 months house arrest, and then 6 months halfway house. And he's now completed all of that, and he had a year of probation that ran consecutive to it. Kevin is actually in his last, less than 2 weeks now of halfway house. He will be out on June 1st. And so he is getting excited for that, has started, you know, looking for a place to live and everything. And Kevin did about 3 years in prison. Something that I think is a good, like, lesson from their case, as well as you can see this with Nicole and Joseph, is that, you know, the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act, like, it has the scary terrorism word in it. But especially, like, looking at Tyler's sentence, he, you know, 6 months halfway house and 6 months house arrest, and then the 3 months of prison. Like, the sentences aren't that different than what we might see if they were charged not under a terrorism statute. And so I think that that's an important thing for people to note, is sometimes we should look past what the rhetoric is around things and look more at what the sentences actually are, and not that, you know, every day in jail or prison that someone has to spend is terrible and shouldn't be happening at all. But I think it is important to break down some of the fear of what terrorism convictions necessarily mean. Also with Kevin and Tyler, then, they're both doing really well right now, but, you know, as people are getting a prison out of halfway houses and stuff, we do have to let's continue to show people support, because it's a continued process of adjustment as they start to think about, you know, what's their relationship with the movement going to continue to be, how do they want to be involved, and be, you know, supportive and welcoming to them, but also to remember that people are dealing with a lot of trauma as they are on the other side of this, and maybe trying to navigate how exactly it makes sense for them to get back involved. So for me, like with them as my friends, it's just been, you know, having those conversations and, you know, paying attention to what kind of support they need and being responsive to that. And that's something that, you know, whether we're friends with people who are at that point or we're not friends, but just, you know, watching updates on a website or something, to be responsive to what people are asking for. And remembering that just because someone is out of prison doesn't mean that they don't still need that support.
Do we often find that much of support for anarchists or other political and radical prisoners often comes from a small number of people in limited circles? So one aspect of this work must be trying to generalize it and spread that work. And one way that we can do this is to build connections with other movements and tendencies. Can you speak to the connection between animal rights circles and those of prisoner support, or other examples that you have?
Yeah, so unfortunately, a horrible trend in the, like, more mainstream animal rights movement has been that it's been a very isolated movement, very, like, single issue focused, and what that ends up working out fine for animal rights prisoners because they do get a lot of support. Kind of seeing the difference in different support work I've done, I've seen how, you know, because animal rights, the mainstream animal rights movement is overall, you know, has a lot of people with a lot of resources, maybe access to money in different forms. And so there's just, you know, an outpouring of like support and donations and stuff like that, that really help the animal rights prisoners to be able to, you know, constantly have money on their commissary. They get a lot of letters, have people, you know, offering support in different ways. And it's often frustrating though to see how limited a lot of animal rights people will support. Like they'll support animal rights prisoners, but then not understand how, you know, it's the same system that's criminalizing other people and putting people in cages, and not understand how that support should be spread out to other people as well. So something that I've personally tried to do a lot in with having connections to the animal rights movement is trying to have more of those conversations with people. And, you know, whenever we're talking about supporting people like Nicole and Joseph, also talking about, you know, supporting maybe the Cleveland Four or other prisoners, and also trying to use it to start a conversation about just broadly, why is prisoner support important? Why should we be talking about prison abolition? And I hope that that's something that within the animal rights movement can become more and more understood, that, you know, if we're opposing putting animals in cages, we should be opposing putting humans in cages. And we should look at, you know, all the issues with state power that come into play. But I'd say that it's definitely something that needs more work. And luckily there are a lot of animal rights activists who do get it and, you know, support a lot of different prisoners and talk about prison issues more broadly. And so for those people who are already understanding it, I think that it's a, you know, something that we should take as a responsibility that we have to, you know, talk to other people in those movements that we're a part of about expanding the support that we do and constantly challenging the idea that prison should even exist, because a lot of animal rights activists haven't thought much into that realm of stuff yet.
What are some obstacles that you've observed in doing prisoner solidarity work? And what do you think we could collectively be doing better?
Something that I've run into is, I mean, as you said in like the last question, it is often a limited number of people doing it, and it can burn people out. I know that in a lot of the work that I've done, I've seen a lot of people who start out really excited to like be, you know, kind of a core part of a support crew or something. And then, within, you know, a year or something, they kind of drop out of being involved in that. And so I think that we need to have a lot more conversations around what it means to do prisoner support, and that it's, you know, it's not just something that you can do for like the first year while a case is getting more attention, but that it is a long-term thing. And also being more openly talking about the stresses associated with prisoner support, because it's not easy. A lot of times we're dealing with heavy issues with people. A lot of times the people doing support work are friends or partners of the people who are in prison. And so there's even greater emotional stress in doing it. And we need to just constantly be having those conversations of like, how can we show each other support, and how do we make sure that we do have the emotional capacity to do the support long term, and to be doing it in ways that are as healthy as possible, and to be able to talk about the stress and how we can deal with it, and what we can do to find ways to relieve that. Because I mean, it is going to be difficult, and it's going to bring up issues for people, and it's not something that everyone's going to want to do, but for the people who are willing to make it something that can be sustaining, and that we do talk about it.
Can you speak to how the strengths or failings of prisoner support have personally affected your friends, either currently or previously in prison, or who are doing some of the core support work?
Yeah, I mean, hearing from people who are, like, my friends in prison, like, it's great to see, like, their reactions to, like, when they do feel support, like, how excited they are when, you know, they get letters and how much that can mean to them to be hearing from people, like, sometimes around the world who, you know, are showing support for them, can help them to still feel connected to a community, to not feel so isolated. And it's great to see, like, those examples of people reaching out. And so that's always makes me happy to see for those people, for the people who are in prison. And it makes me glad to know, as someone, like, working to support them, that people are being responsive to all the effort we're doing to, you know, encourage people to write letters and all that. But again, kind of as I was talking earlier, like, a lot of times the initial support doesn't continue at the same level. And I've seen moments when it seems hard for people when, you know, they're starting to get fewer letters, or, you know, people that they were writing to stop writing to them because people just don't continue with that. And so, again, that goes back to having these conversations about how do we do continued support for people, whether that means the people doing, like, you know, maybe as part of support crews and they're more directly involved in all the layers of support work, or just, you know, someone who takes time to write letters to prisoners, to remember the importance of, like, keep writing, keep staying involved in doing whatever you're doing, because it's not fair for us to, you know, start lacking in the support we're doing while they're still in prison.
Do you see ways that June 11th can help address these challenges? And what are your hopes for June 11th this year?
I think that June 11th and, like, other days, too, that, you know, there are pushes for prisoner support, it's a great reminder to people to, you know, keep doing what they're doing and to encourage thinking about, you know, the bigger issues that we're dealing with. 'Cause there are definitely layers to this. There's just the level of, you know, we're doing this because we want to support our friends and comrades, and we want to make sure that they don't feel alone, that they know we have their backs. And then there's, like, the bigger level of, you know, it's a fucked up system, and we need to constantly be, you know, doing what we can to expose what the prison industrial complex is and to be doing work to reduce the strength that it has and to be challenging its legitimacy and to have those bigger conversations, whether it's in our movements or even more publicly than that, to have these continued conversations about what we should be doing and have that be turning into action. It's great to see, you know, campaigns against building new prisons, or campaigns to, you know, reduce funding to police forces and things like that, and to keep also organizing against prisons in tangible ways that are beyond the support work that we're doing for prisoners, but also challenging the ability of prisons to still function as they do.
What are your broader hopes and visions for June 11th in the years to come?
I hope it continues to be something that more and more people know about. Like, in my experience, it's something that I've seen mostly the anarchist community knows about. So I'd like to see more of, you know, the resistance movements and other social justice movements become more aware of it, and it be something that can be a way to introduce more people to the importance of prisoner support and the other issues that come with that. And with prisoner support stuff, I just always hope that, you know, by there being something that encourages people to, you know, look further into issues, get involved in some way, or to write to someone, that'll be an entry point for them to get more involved in the work. And for people that are new to it, I encourage people to just, like, start writing letters to someone, because hearing someone's personal experiences from being on the inside and getting to know them as a person rather than just someone who's been labeled a prisoner, that's the best way to learn about, you know, what this system really is and what it does to people. Because I think that people are often surprised that things aren't what they seem, and that, you know, some of the worst things about prison sometimes wouldn't be what people anticipate even before they start writing to someone. But once you start to get to know people personally, you really see what this system does to people and how it can tear people apart, and how important it is to be in touch with people and have those different forms of support and to do what we can to try and stop it from doing this to people.
Are there any struggles or moments in the recent past that have been inspiring to you?
Gosh, it's been quite the year of things. I guess just something that stands out to me is I had the opportunity to do legal support out at Standing Rock, and that was a place where a lot of new people were getting involved. And it was cool to see how they're kind of like in an on-the-ground, in-the-moment situation. People were figuring out how to do jail support and prisoner support. And when I was doing jail visits with people there, I had some pretty inspiring and amazing conversations with people about why they were there and like what that moment to them meant to be. I mean, it was super intense emotional conversation we having with like young Indigenous people who were in jail out at Standing Rock, and the brutality that they were experiencing from the police there, but they had such conviction that like this is what, you know, they needed to be doing. They needed to be out there, and just so inspiring to see how much they understood the violence of the system, yet they were still there pushing back on it. And yeah, so just looking at situations like that where we are seeing, you know, we all probably saw the violence of Standing Rock playing out on social media and stuff, and to have seen it closer up and to see just the devotion that people had to what they were doing was pretty incredible.
Are there any other projects you're involved in or interested in that you'd like to talk about?
I guess as a final thing, I'd just like to say, like, to encourage people to support, like, the that I've talked about, like, Cleveland 4 and Nicole and Joseph. There's website support sites for both of them. It's cleveland4solidarity.org and supportnicoleandjoseph.com, as well as, like, Facebook pages for both. And there's also a Twitter page for Cleveland 4. And those are great places to watch for updates about what's going on and what kind of support they need. You can see addresses for writing to them. You can see book lists. You can see how to make donations to support them. And yeah, if they need support. And then hopefully lots of other prisoners are getting support as well. And I hope that this is all continuing to be part of these bigger conversations that we need to be having about supporting individual prisoners as well as what this means on a broader scale.